Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what is going on? Episode 60 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. For those of you new to the podcast, welcome on board for a wild ride, especially in the football season. Coming up less than some 2.5 weeks, if I guess it correctly here. Here coming up, K-State taking on Stanford, the All-State Kickoff Class Kickoff game down there in Arlington, Texas, the Purple Project Podcast. We're all about Kansas State athletics here as I live in Manhattan, Kansas. The Purple Project Podcast, get it wherever podcasts are found, of course. Spotify, we're on that. Audio Boom, iHeartRadio, and Amazon, and a couple of more others. I'm working on a couple more other outlets out there, trying to get this podcast out there to many outlets as I can. Cannot believe it. Episode 60 tonight on the podcast, as we're recording on a Wednesday, August 18th, 2021. Before I bring on my co-host, Alex Aiden, out there in San Diego, California. Yes, I'm recording this prior to K-State soccer tomorrow, getting things kicked off in their regular season match against Weber State at Buser Family Park. I've been saying Buser Family Stadium. I guess that's a habit with Bill Snyder Family Stadium. But it's K-State soccer, 1-1 in their preseason matches over the last week. They get set for that. But man, oh man, college football ever so closely getting ready to set center stage. And we got the NFL preseason going on before recording this podcast. Watch a little baseball, as with the Yankees and Red Sox. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on my co-host for the weekly edition of the Purple Project Podcast, Alex Aiden, out there, out west in San Diego. Alex, what's going on?
Not too much, Eddie. Another week, and here we are with school rolling around. A lot of people are going back. I'm not sure when K-State goes back, or if they're back, I don't know. I'm sorry, but
yeah, I should.
It is school rolling around time, which means football is right around the corner. And the preseason top 25 came out this week, and the Big 12 had three teams in the top 25. Oklahoma was number 2, Iowa State was number 7, and Texas was number 21. And there were some other Big 12 teams that were receiving votes. I believe Oklahoma State was right at the top. They were on the fringe of being ranked, and they weren't, but they were right at the top with votes. I think TCU was receiving votes as well. I think West Virginia was receiving votes too. So a handful of schools receiving votes. No votes for K-State in the preseason top 25. But that's not really surprising when you look at the way last year ended. They're probably not deserving of receiving votes to be ranked right now, but. I was telling you, Eddie, before we jumped on the show, that I was kind of taking a deeper look at K-State's, beginning of the schedule, and really just how front-heavy it is. And it really is crazy just how front-heavy this schedule is for K-State, because you look at it, and they open up against Stanford, as we've talked about, in AT&T Stadium, Jerry World, down in Texas. Stanford's receiving votes. They're receiving votes to be ranked in a poll. Then you jump to their second game against Southern Illinois. Southern Illinois is ranked in the top 10 in the preseason FCS poll. Mm. So they are not an FCS slouch. They are considered to be an FCS power this year. And they beat North Dakota State last year as well. Okay, whatever you want to bet. We know what happened when North Dakota State came into Manhattan last. That's the Illinois team is a lot better than I thought they were. So,
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, not going to be a cakewalk game. And then you go to the third game, which I think is the biggest trap of them all, is Nevada. Nevada is on the verge of being ranked. I mean, they're receiving a lot of votes to be ranked. And no one's talking about that Nevada game. But this Nevada team is supposed to be really, really good. And you could legitimately make a case that game could be harder than the Stanford game, the Nevada game. So, K-State very well may be an underdog going into that game against Nevada. They're an underdog right now going into the Stanford game. I think you could make a good case it'll be an underdog going in against Nevada as well. Mm-hmm. And then you open up, as we've talked about, with the top three Big 12 teams to begin the season in Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Iowa State. So, man, Eddie, I mean, if things don't break your way, you could be legitimately looking at like a 1-5 start if things go bad.
Oh, I don't want to hear that.
It is so hard, and it gets a lot easier, in the back half. And we'll talk about that later when we actually break down the schedule here in the coming weeks. But boy, you want to talk about a tough 6-game stretch to open up the season? I mean, there's not one easy game in there. The one easy game would be Southern Illinois, and they're ranked in the top 10 in the FCS. So, K-State should win that game, and I think that they will, and they'll probably handle them fine. But, man, I mean, that Nevada game, that's going to be – I mean, those, you're talking about two non-con games where you very well may not be ranked. May not be favored. That's crazy. That's crazy. So, buckle up, K-State fans. It could be a bit of a rough start, which really emphasizes the importance of beating Stanford that opening week, which we've talked a ton about. So, excited! I'm excited to be talking about it, though, Eddie. I'm excited to be able to look in all that stuff and be able to break it all down and do that. So, definitely want to keep an eye on that. And also, anybody who's keeping up with the conference realignment stuff, the Big 10, Pac-12, and ACC are now discussing some sort of alliance or possible merger. So every conference except the Big 12 of the Power Fives are involved in some sort of move. So I think you could look at it a couple ways. It's bad for the Big 12. There's no doubt that it's bad for the Big 12. But I think you could look at it and possibly say it's not the worst thing in the world for K-State, because if the conference stays together, that might be the best scenario for K-State, because it's hard to really find a landing spot for them outside of the Big 12. So, you wish that the Big 12 would have been able to latch on to the Pac-12. Maybe they will in the future. But while it sucks to see that, I think anything that involves no one leaving the Big 12 and the Big 12 expanding is not the worst thing in the world for K-State, because I just don't think there's many options for them out there. So, interesting news there. And I know Coach Klieman, he talked about it in his press conference here this past week, that they had recruits asking about realignment, and they were reaffirming them, hey, you're going to be playing football at the highest level here. Don't worry about that. And he said that, he doesn't think that any decisions will happen anytime soon. So, we'll keep an eye on that. But it is affecting K-State football a little bit, and affecting those recruits, not as much now as it was early on. But definitely something that Chris Klieman and the football program are having to deal with. I'm sure other programs will end up dealing with it as well. So, again, a lot going on there. But you know what? I'm just excited. The football's right around the corner, Eddie. So we're a couple weeks away, and I'm looking forward to break it down with you.
Yes. Pretty much 2 weeks from – it'll be September 1st, obviously, and either that week or Sunday, we will preview Stanford, getting you ready for that first game. So it's pretty much 2.5 weeks away after recording this podcast. Cannot wait for that. And yeah, on the way to work, I have kind of follow up on that. Stanford and Nevada, I know we're jumping the gun, but I want to save all this for next week's edition. Continue to talk about the schedule and, predicting the win or loss like we did last year on the podcast. So definitely that's going to be a scheduled base podcast next week here on Triple P. But yes, interesting I learned on the two of these teams, Stanford and Nevada, obviously with the whole smoke deal out there out west, Nevada is affected by this, and so is Stanford. So, and K-Man, the radio station here, 1350, 93.3 on the FM side, listened to this while on my way to work. They talked about them possibly joining practices, a joint practice. You're talking about your first three games, Stanford and Nevada is going to be basically practicing against one another. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for K-State, obviously. And then I did not know that much about Southern Illinois, and we already knew about the first three games, conference games for K-State, that are already top heavy. With Oklahoma State, you got to go to Stillwater, another Big 12 opening road game. Again, we'll talk more about it next week, so we're trying not to spoil it. But
a tradition unlike any other, K-State opening on the road.
OU and Iowa State, back-to-back home games. So, that's going to be really interesting, and I think Wildcat Nation does not want to hear a 1-5 start. You're in really deep trouble if you get start off there. So,
and you know what? Quickly, Eddie, I heard someone say, you know, man, if K-State can get out of that first 6-4-2, you've got to be thrilled. You've got to be ecstatic. You know, for me, Eddie, I was taking a look at the schedule, and I'm not going to, you know, give any of it away. We'll talk about it next week. But I feel like, hell, if they get out of that first 6-3-3, I think that you feel good about it. You're like, okay, I can deal with that. I can deal with getting out of that 3-3. I mean, when you look at the back half of your schedule, if you can get out of that 3-3, I think you are definitely happy. 4-2, I would be over the moon.
That would be fantastic.
I really would be. 3-3, I would be perfectly fine. I would be perfectly fine if K-State was 3-3 in those first six games, just because of the way that back half of the schedule sets up, you could potentially go on a run. Because last year, we talked, Eddie, about it, the schedule was back heavy last year. So
This year is the opposite. Great.
And we kept talking about, well, you know, you're going to have to deal with that back half of the schedule, and then K-State couldn't win in the back half. Well, it's the flip this year, you know. If you can find a way to split and you go 3-3 in those first six games, you know, you could cruise and you could really get on a roll there in the back half. So, you know, I definitely think that would be good. But the danger is, Eddie, if you start 2-4, you know, you're 1-5, you're 2-4, something like that, then things can really start to get rough because, you know, fans start getting upset, players, you know, begin to lose the locker room potentially. A lot of different things that can happen that could really fracture anything you could do in the back half to kind of make that up. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see the way it plays out. And like, like you said, we'll talk about that more next week. But I think that schedule is going to be much more difficult than even people thought 3 months ago. And maybe it was just because we didn't know how good Southern Illinois and Nevada were going to be. Or maybe other people knew and I didn't, but that just puts that much more pressure on you know, this season, the front half of that season, those non-con games, and particularly Stanford, and getting off to that, you know, 1-0 start.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely in a year that you have to get off to a good start for Chris Klieman. So, yeah, definitely that's something. We'll definitely keep an eye on that, is for sure. Obviously, more on the schedule next week as we make our predictions next week. And then, of course, the following week, it's Stanford week, pretty much. And then, again, another reminder for those of you new to the podcast, Wildcat fans and other fans, to the Purple Project podcast, we did a rapid reaction following every K-State game. We will do that again this year, same as last year. It will count as an episode of Triple P, beginning with a Stanford game. So definitely September 4th, after the Stanford game, not right after, but in prime time, we will talk about the Stanford game in Jerry World, and hopefully we'll be talking about a K-State dub against Stanford, but that's going to be tough. But K-State with the home, we talked about the heavy alumni-based down there, Texas, Dallas, Fort Worth area. So we've talked about that all summer long on this show. So we'll have to see what happens. They're kind of transitioning in. Alex mentioned the top 25 came out early this week, and he mentioned three other Big 12 teams are in there. And of course, Oklahoma State is not, but they received the most votes with 107. TCU, and this is not me even really looking at their roster yet. Again, we'll both have to look into it a little more deeper. But TCU, 40 votes. Let's see down here. Boise State, Nevada, BYU, Ball State, Houston, Boston College, UCF, West Virginia has 3 votes. A team that's given K-State fits with Neil Brown, the Neil Brown effect down up there in Morgantown over there as well. But obviously Alabama getting the most votes, the obvious number one choice there. And then one of your opponents there for K-State, Oklahoma, starts off the year number 2 in the land. Clemson at 3, Ohio State 4, Georgia's 5, the back end of this top 10, A&M, Iowa State 7. That's your third Big 12 game of the year right there. Ooh, Oklahoma, Iowa State, Cincinnati 8, Notre Dame 9, North Carolina 10, and I'm just going to go down right down to the top 25. Oregon 11, Wisconsin 12, Florida starts the year 13th, Miami 14th, USC 15th. You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, LSU 16th, Indiana, interesting, Indiana 17th, Iowa 18th, Penn State 19th, Washington 20th, and then your last Big 12 team in there, your final game of the year after Thanksgiving, Texas starts off the year 21st with their new head coach, Steve Sarkisian. Coastal Carolina, Louisiana, Utah, Arizona State, Herm Edwards, 25th in the country there. What a job Herm Edwards done with that program there. So you have basically, Alex, over, even though Oklahoma State, TCU, and West Virginia getting votes, you have at least 6 Big 12 teams basically voted right there among votes getting into that top 25. So yeah, the K-State's getting... That K-State schedule, I mean, that's going to be a gauntlet, especially early on as well. So, in Alabama, this is the most weeks. Obviously, Alabama leads everybody in that category. 131 consecutive weeks in season of being a number one squad. And then you have the Big 12 opponent, Oklahoma, sitting there at 101. Of course, they have Spencer Rattler back again. And OU, and remember this, OU comes to Manhattan this year. So K-State will be looking to make an incredible 3-0 Chris Klieman against the Sooners this year, Alex.
That would be absolutely insane. Chris Klieman found a way to go 3-0 against the Sooners in this first 3 seasons. That would just be crazy. But, yeah, Oklahoma, I'll start with them because we talked with them last. They're going to be, this is going to be one of Lincoln Riley's, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but this is going to be one of Lincoln Riley's best teams since he's been in Oklahoma. Their defense is going to be a lot better than it was last year. You know, Spencer Rattler's got a year under his belt now. I think that he could be the best quarterback in college football this year. And we know what Lincoln Riley does with QBs as well. And so, you know, I fully expect him to take a huge step this year, as do most people. And, you know, Oklahoma always has great skill position guys. So, you know, they're going to score. They're going to score. I think the big thing for them is they are now going to have a more mature, developed quarterback, and who is going to arguably be the best quarterback in college football this year. And you're going to have much improved defense. So, Oklahoma, they're going to be loaded. I think that they've got a very good chance to run the table this year. You know, looking at the Big 12 and what they can do, you know, Iowa State's definitely going to be a team that could give them fits. But I believe they have Iowa State in Norman this year, so I think that's really going to help them. So I really do think they've got a good shot at running the table. I think Iowa State's going to be really good. Mentioned them. I think they got most of their team coming back. You got Brock Purdy and Breece Hall and all the weapons that they have on that offense. Quite the headache to deal with. I know that there's some people who don't think, aren't quite sold on Brock Purdy as a guy that can lead them to the promised lands. And I was not sold on it until last year. Last year, I think that he and that Iowa State offense kind of proved me wrong and said, no, we can do this. And so I do think that they can take that step. I shouldn't say take the step because they really kind of took the step last year. But I mean, I think they have the potential to even take another step this year. I think once again, I think the biggest problem for them is that they're going to be going to Oklahoma, you know, for their game against them, and they may have to beat Oklahoma twice, or at least once, if not twice, to have a chance at the College Football Playoff. So that may be difficult, and winning the Big 12 may be difficult because of Oklahoma, but they're going to be good. They're definitely going to be good, in my opinion, and just kind of just a tier below Oklahoma, in my opinion. You know, just round out top 25. Texas, I don't know.
Yeah.
overrated. I mean, every year, Eddie, there are two things I can bank on. Two schools that seem to always be overrated or overhyped. It seems like Texas and TCU. I don't know what it is with Texas, why they end up in the top 25 every year. Actually, I do know why. It's because of their name. But I just don't understand what Texas has done to get into the top 25. How does Texas end up in the top 25 and Oklahoma State does not end up in the top 25? You know, Oklahoma State, who's got their quarterback coming back, who's got a bunch of their playmakers coming back. I mean, how does that team not end up in the top 25 and Texas does? I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me. Oklahoma State was picked ahead of Texas in the Big 12 standings, if I recall. So I don't know. I could be wrong on that. I thought that they were. Either way, I thought Texas was picked fourth. The point being, I think Oklahoma State's better, moral of the story. So I don't know how Texas gets in there. And I don't know how TCU receives 40 votes. Eddie, every year, I feel like we hear about how good TCU is going to be and all these players that they're developing and this and that, and they're just the same team every year. I mean, they're just the same thing. I mean, they're just, you know, they're good, you know, 6-win team. I mean, 6-win, 7-win. I mean, that's usually every year. That's just what it is. So, I mean, yeah, they'll be good. They're going to be competitive, but I just don't. What do they do to garner 40 votes? I mean, why is West Virginia so low? Why are they only getting 3 votes? I don't know. At that point, Eddie, I just think it's a lot of voters who don't know the Big 12 the way that us inside the Big 12 do. And I think a majority of us know that, you know, West Virginia is probably a better football team than TCU and that Oklahoma State is probably a better football team than Texas. But I just don't know. I don't know what it is with Texas and TCU, with those two Texas schools, with them getting all that love. But you never know. I could be wrong. TCU is probably going to go like 9-3 this year because I just said that. So, you know, what of it? But can't complain with number one with Auburn. Wow, with Alabama. Definitely not Auburn. Alabama with 8 before that. With Alabama number one, you know, they were just so dominant last year. They have another quarterback who you can make an argument will be the best quarterback in college football. And you throw that in with all the playmakers that Bama has on both sides of the ball. They're going to be tough. You know, they're going to be tough for anyone to beat this year. I do think it's a little interesting. I'll throw this note out to kind of put a bow on it. A little interesting that Oklahoma's ahead of Clemson. That is interesting. That is interesting. I understand Trevor Lawrence is gone, but Clemson's been so dominant for so long, and I fully expect that Clemson will be dominant again this year. And they've got a quarterback that we've seen. He had to play some last year when Trevor Lawrence had COVID. We know that he's the real deal. So, kind of surprised that Oklahoma's ahead of Clemson. You know, I really thought Clemson would get that number two spot, but in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't probably mean much because I think both of those teams will get into the College Football Playoff. I know it's a little early to be saying that, but I do think both those teams probably will. I'm just saying. Let me put it this way, Eddie. I'll put it this way. Both of those teams have a good, very good chance at getting in because they both have schedules that scream 11-1 or 12-0 or 12-1. One, some combination of those. And I think that that gets either one of them in. So, Clemson starts with Georgia, I believe, which is going to be a hell of a game. And they may lose that game. But if they lose that game, I think they have a good shot at running the table. And then Oklahoma has Iowa State, and they could have Iowa State twice. And they do have their kryptonite in K-State in Manhattan. But it's still pretty favorable for Oklahoma as well when you look at their schedule. So, yeah, I stand by that. Yeah, I think they both got a good shot at getting into the college football playoff. So, grand scheme of things, I don't think it matters. Interesting, though, that Clemson is behind Oklahoma. Interesting.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer in Manhattan, Kansas. I was in out west, San Diego, California, the Purple Project Podcast, episode 60. Then when this episode comes out, it'll be either tomorrow or Friday. So be on the lookout for that, K-State Nation. As well, we have approached 60 episodes and we're about to head into another football season, pretty much 2.5 weeks away, 17 days into the official kickoff to K-State's 2021 football campaign. That is interesting there. Final note there to kind of elaborate, to close that part out of the show. Yeah, Clemson, yeah, their third OU is ahead of them. So, yeah, Clemson is still, they still have guys over there. But, you know, we're not looking at the roster too much. But, yeah, so it'll be interesting. Yeah, Oklahoma, they've ruled the Big 12. Obviously, the big news this summer is Oklahoma, Texas are on their way out of the conference to join the SEC Mega Conference over there. So we'll see what happens there. Obviously this year with them. Obviously, Spencer Rattler's got a year under his belt in experience as well. So definitely we'll be keeping a close watch on those guys, obviously, throughout the year. Now, going back earlier, obviously, Alex brought up the semester start for the K-State, and we should shame on us for not knowing that. But next week, classes will be starting next week. It'll be next Monday, the 23rd. Classes will begin the fall semester, and it will end December 9th as well. And the exams will roll around December 13th, 2021, and then the exam week ends on the 17th on that same week.
Exam week, Eddie.
Yeah.
Late exam week.
Yep, that's right before Christmas, 7 days.
Yeah, I know. Our exam week felt like it was usually like the first week of December.
Yep, yeah, when we were in school, yep, exactly. So definitely times between now, when we're in school, and then now, right now, not to mention the whole, again, have to bring up that dreaded word, the whole COVID thing again.
Yep.
So, yep, that's
the variant, yeah.
Yep, so that's just kind of the main kind of components to the fall semester for students rolling in here to town. It's there's traffic. Definitely, you can definitely feel it picking up a lot as each day gets closer. And definitely, students will be moving in this weekend. While I'm thinking about that, faculty and a few other early arrivals for students happened over the last several days here in Manhattan. And it'll definitely ratchet up three notches this weekend, so definitely.
But the question, Eddie, is will the students have to deal with the construction?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Oh. Yes, sir. There's still a bridge. Okay, so this is a good thing you brought this up. Okay, so there's the bridge on, for those of you who don't live in Manhattan, who live out of town, so this is for y'all, and of course for the new people who are listening to this podcast, the Purple Project Podcast. So I live out up here up in Stag Hill, out
towards when you get out K-18, when you're heading to Junction City, right? So the bridge, they got one side of the bridge done, so which is pretty good, which is pretty smooth because they raised the bridge. For those of you who don't know, they raised the bridge because of all of the big flooding that was going on between the Four Seasons and the Shell. And when I was driving in it while for work when you had those huge downpours, right? It just clogs up everything. You're just hydroplaning through those sides. Yeah. Very, very dangerous. So they raised they had to redo that section of the road. So they raised the bridge a little bit. So they got the right side of the bridge. So now they're working on the other side of the bridge, and it's still a work in progress. So yep, it's going to be a nightmare, especially before 4 o'clock, especially on Fridays. I think it's worse on Fridays for I don't know why, but it seems to be that way, whether it's with no school or with school in session. So you're gonna be dealing with that. And folks, first home football game is, let me double check my calendar here, it is on the 11th, September 11th. That's less than a month away. Refill the bill, the campaign. Me and Alex refill the bill, of course, with the
bill.
Of course, with the old COVID hanging over us again. But still, I mean, so. But anyways, back to my point. There's more construction there. There's construction going on with Seth Child in Kimball and Denison. So when you're heading towards the footballs. Heading towards the footballs.
Literally right up to the stadium.
Yeah, it's a one-way. It opens back up between, I believe, Browning and Kimball. It opens back up, but the two-lane, but it's basically a one-lane. They're fixing up something. Oh, crap. They're fixing up something on Wreath Avenue, so by Seco Park, if you remember where that was. So they're doing something there, and now they're doing kind of a good section. Seth Child, Wreath, and Kimball, right there, past the new look Pizza Hut. Go past there, still one lane, and then about the church. I can't remember what church called it. So there's a lot of churches here in Manhattan, Kansas. The big church, depending on what direction you're coming from, let's just say I'm going off of Seth Child and turning to my left and going east to Bill Snyder Family Stadium, right? So there's a church left. Yeah. And then there's that whole section right there. So they got done the critical part, which is College and Kimball, or Denison. I want to say Kimball, yeah. Kimball and Denison, they got that all figured out. So now they finished up the parking lot. And while I'm on the stadium, they finished up, they repaved the whole parking lot area of Bill Snyder Family Stadium, so that looks really nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yes, sir. So that's really nice.
Fresh turf to tailgate on.
Yep. Fresh turf to refill the bill. As so that's gonna be good. So that it looks really nice. But yeah, they still got that going on. So that's gonna be traffic is going to be heading in and out depending on if you look, especially for those season ticket holders that come out from Western Kansas, especially. That is going to be an issue there, like it always is every year. So students are going to be dealing with the construction. It seems like construction is everywhere, and I believe I want to say there's one more section of construction. Yes. So in Aggieville, right? They just finished up.
Oh, that's a worse spot. Come on.
Yeah. So in Aggieville, right? It's a one-way. So when you get off, I can't remember. I should know better, but we get off that main road, I think. Crap.
Moro?
No, it's not Moro.
Santa Moro?
I want to say, dang it.
Oh my god.
I want to say it's like when you're heading out towards the old. Okay, I'm going to use this. This is dumb, but I'm going to roll it anyways. There's the old gas station there. You have the city park, the gas station, and it's right before the big parking lot in front of campus. You turn on that road left, it leads up that big hill. So, and now west, you go west there. So you go, if you go east into Aggieville, it's all kind of screwed up there. You still have and what's going on right now, again, for those of you new that don't know what's going on. So in Aggieville right now, there's a new...
Bluemont, Eddie? Are you talking about Bluemont?
There he is. Yes, Bluemont. Yep, Bluemont Hotel.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you were talking about in Aggieville. So I was like, Morrow?
Well, it's still kind of right in when you enter Aggieville, though. It's still like when you get away on the other side of Bluemont.
Yeah, that's the worst spot.
Yeah, you have all those. You have that sub shop there. You have Varsity Donuts there.
Oh, yeah.
Buffalo Wild Wings. They're right there. They're doing work right there. It's closed off because they're building the new parking garage there.
Yes, that's right.
If you haven't been keeping up with that, so they're still doing that. It's still a work in progress. So they're going to be dealing with that. It's basically, with Raleigh House right there, you're forced to turn left instead of going straight. If you're going across west from Bluemont, you're turning that way. You're going left right there towards Tanner's and Kites and all that. So.
So when I get back to Manhattan next, Manhattan will look unrecognizable. That's what you're saying.
Pretty much. I painted a good picture for you. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Got it. Yeah, well, poor students. I'm sorry you have to deal with all that construction. I remember every summer, and I know people did tune in to hear construction talk, but that's okay. I remember every summer, we would leave, and they'd do a bunch of construction. And we'd roll back in, they'd be wrapping up the construction when we were rolling back in for the fall semester. So I know that they timed it out to try to get work done and students were gone because there just wasn't as much traffic on the roads. And usually they were wrapping up, when we got there in August, but it sounds like they're not going to quite be able to beat the students this year.
Nope, they are not. They are not going to beat the students, and they're definitely not going to beat them since they're going to be coming in from all different directions, whether they're international, Western Kansas, Kansas City, out of the state. Yeah, you're not going to beat them there, so that's going to be a that is going to be a nightmare for those construction workers out there. And yes, with me being, well, I got promoted a couple weeks ago to the office area, but I'm still going to be the universal backup driver, so I won't know what's going on necessarily out on the streets, but I drive on them every day, so definitely, that's going to be interesting, especially Aggieville. It's already, especially with the whole nightlife situation, especially Friday nights, Thursday nights, whatever night it is. There's always something going on in Aggieville, in that general area there. You can only get the Burger King one way. Actually, two now. East, you can go to Burger King, but there's only one entrance way because they have that whole road. That half that road is blocked off because of their building that new parking garage and they're redoing that road, so that's blocked off as well. So you can only get poor Burger King, but yeah, you can only get the Burger King. At least you can get there two ways. Either you can get there going to City Park, or you can get there going into K-State, going into that art museum. So yeah, so there's that. So there's a whole bunch of things going on, and on top of that, Alex. A couple months ago, this is the Purple Project podcast. Again, this is all about K-State athletics and even off the campus stuff too. So, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. So they're across from the old stadium. They blew up the St. Isidore's, the Catholic church. So they're redoing that.
Really?
Yeah. So they're redoing that. What? And they're doing, because I was delivering a whole bunch of material to that area. They're adding a student center. They're redoing the whole thing. So they're adding a new student center to it for those men and women over there who go to that St. Isidore. So they're going. They're actually going to church. I think I've been catching those folks. They're going to church in the Alumni Center. Because I keep seeing...
They?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they are because every time after church, we see... me and a fam, we see students or adults or the elderly come out of that general direction from the old football, from the old stadium. So I think they moved it in there for the time being anyway. So, but they do still, they have parts of it up. No, I've been in the student, been in the kitchen part at least, where they have like a kitchen and kind of like an annex where, if you don't know, if ladies and gentlemen don't know what that is, it's kind of like something where after church you have a little like get together, like for Sunday brunch, or whatnot, yeah. A little area there. So they got that done as well. But yeah, had a chance to go in there and look around a little bit there. So they blew. They blew that up. So that they have that going on as well.
And so that won't be done for school either.
No. Nah. Hell no. That's definitely not gonna be done for school. I don't know what obviously, you know, we talked about the K-State's facilities, obviously, on this podcast, obviously, which obviously the whole project Gene Taylor and the finishing product of the Shamrock Zone, obviously,
yep.
The big debut. I mean, we saw it a little bit in the open practice, but the big debut, September 11th, Southern Illinois game, the first official home game for K-State. Obviously, the first game for K-State is before that with Stanford. And then let's not forget, and while I'm on this subject, while I'm thinking about it right now, folks, the Jordy Nelson baseball-softball game is going to be September 12th. We talked about that earlier this summer. I wanted to bring that back up for those that are interested. You can go on to the K-State Sports website to find out more information on that. So there's a lot of things going on here late as we begin here in the second half of August and about to enter into football season. With that as well. So yeah, Alex, there you go. St. Isidore's is being rebuilt from the inside out.
I'm sure it'll look great once it's done, but I had no idea. Interesting. Wow, lots of changes going on in the Manhattan area and in the K-State area. And like I said, when I show up next, someone took a video. I can't remember who it was, but someone took a video driving down Bluemont. And it already looked almost unrecognizable with the way it currently is. I had no idea all those apartments were up next to the Bluemont Hotel.
Yep.
I had no idea that they knocked all those homes down and put all those hotels up. And I was like, whoa, this looks totally different. I knew about the stuff in Aggieville, but I didn't know about the stuff on the other side of Bluemont. And mm-hmm. I was just like, oh my gosh, that almost looks unrecognizable. Well, boy, I'm going to roll in and I'm going to think I'm in a different city. I'm gonna be like, I'm not Manhattan, am I? Like, this is Manhattan. No, this is Manhattan. Well, apparently I will be, Eddie. Apparently I will be. Who knew? Who knew that in 6 years so much could change?
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yes, sir. It is a whole different looking city once everything gets built and finished. This is the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition. Eddie Greer, Alex living in San Diego, California. I am here in Manhattan, Kansas, preparing for the students to get back, or the rest of them anyway. Some of them are already here, getting themselves moved in, especially the new students as well. So definitely moving in time is definitely upon us here in the city of Manhattan, Kansas, the Little Apple, home of Kansas State University. Yeah, so definitely there's another project going on. I can't remember that off the top of my head right now. But yeah, there's a lot of things going on with all that. So yeah, definitely. We caught up the newbies and some of the men and women who've been either been oblivious or just not paying attention, but I'm sure they've been paying attention to what's going on. Okay, so now, obviously, the back end of the K-State defense, kind of a nice, well, kind of a weirdish transition from city life to the K-State football team, kind of to put a pin on the K-State linebackers in secondary. We kind of already been diddling and dabbling with, especially with last week's episode. So it was kind of just to put it all in a bundle here, obviously, in the talk as I go down, switch my screen over to the depth chart, obviously. Daniel Green, Cody Fletcher, We talked about them slightly. They're on the first team, obviously. And while I'm thinking about this, I saw something on Twitter, Alex, pertaining to linebackers from the practices so far. Somebody, I think either Chris Kleiman mentioned it or somebody else did, the linebackers leading the team in interceptions.
Yeah, I did see that.
So I caught that on my lunch break yesterday, just scrolling down through and seeing what's going on with the K-State football team, and that caught my attention as well. Wayne Jones, he was in the secondary last year. He's moved up to the according to the depth chart I'm looking at, been looking at for all summer long. The backup to Daniel Green, a transfer, Eric Munoz is there. Ryan Hennington, who's got scorched. Sorry to bring up bad looking news here, but who got scorched in the opener last year, had no business being back there. He got relocated to the linebackers, so that was interesting there. Austin Moore, and of course Hennington is a third string. Austin Moore, third string. So then when you look at the secondary, obviously Julius Parents, we talked about him a little bit last week, did not participate in that open practice. It's supposed to be one of the big contributions to the team. Reggie Stubblefield, also a transfer. Those two could be big impact in a few weeks, actually, when we take the field against Stanford. Russ Yeast, one of the free safeties there. Of course, you got your ringleader back there, Andron McPherson, who came back for another crack at it. One of the bright stars from last year, Eko Boydeau. And I find this interesting that Justin Gardner is the backup to Eko Boydeau now. Obviously, you have other sources that are more closer to the team than we are, that we keep on mentioning on the show, like a John Kurtz, Tim Fitzgerald, Kellis Robinette, and a couple of them. I encourage you guys to follow them. We're about to enter into football season, so definitely more and more. They do a great job with K-State coverage, as always, there. Yeah, I find it interesting. Justin Gardner is a backup after he started, got thrown in. These two guys are connected to last year because they got thrown into the fire last year and really performed very well. They had their Justin Gardner was dealing with injury issues. I believe he was dealing with COVID at one point. I'm not 100% sure about that.
He might have, but he definitely had some things.
So definitely that's very interesting going in there. Of course, you need that depth on the back end. That's big there. So you're going to have experience there. Amaris Brown, somebody that we did talk about in last week's show, the podcast, as well, is the star, according to my depth chart, the starting nickel right now for K-State as well. So then, I haven't even mentioned these guys. T. Denson, got a lot of playing time last year. I expect him to continue to grow in that spot. And a guy that I really like, Alex, and I've mentioned him quite a bit on Triple P, T.J. Smith, who was flying all over the field last year. And then he tore, I believe, an ACL last year, which is very unfortunate. He's going to be fun to watch. Ross Elder, he started a few games last year, a backup. So again, and again, you throw in Reggie Stubblefield. That's a lot of depth in that secondary, and we have said on this podcast, and I believe this is going to be the strength. If they can bring it game week in, week out, this team, this secondary here, with the pass happy offenses, it goes right back to the top of the show. When you brought up the top end of the schedule, when you have a Spencer Sanders, when you have a Brock Purdy, when you have a Spencer Rattler, and you throw in the quarterback from Nevada too, and Stanford, you throw in, we don't even know who's starting quarterback for Stanford, those type of guys, it's nice to have a solid secondary back there. They're going to have to step up a couple notches, but I believe they have the talent to stay with them guys. And in mentioning the linebackers, Fletcher, who's a tackling machine, Daniel Green, who can come up with big turnover. That's the thing is, turnovers. This defense, I think, is going to have to be turnover happy. Is try to get create turnovers and get that short field, because I think with the backs that we have, with Skylar Thompson back there, you can capitalize on short field. So that's another big thing too. If you can get turnovers, you can do something. And I think in the second half of the year last year, they didn't do that, especially with the situation. Iowa State comes to mind. Baylor, they needed to play, couldn't get it. Texas, they got ran down, up and down the field. So those things, you got to get stops on third down. It seems to be a common thing when it comes to K-State defenses, not getting off the field on third down. So any last kind of thoughts on anything, any last thoughts on the linebackers and the secondary here, Alex, for K-State here?
Well, I think you touched on something really important there, Eddie. You were right. K-State, last year in particular, really struggled to get off of the field. And you're right. Maybe you have a good first, second down stand, and then third down rolls around, you can't get to the stop. And that's just a backbreaker. It's just backbreaker when that happens. And so K-State's going to need to do a better job at forcing turnovers, especially since we talked about this a little bit last week. They may not be able to get the same type of pressure on the quarterback this year that they would have in years past, because there's just unknowns with Khalid Duke and Bronson Massey at those defensive end positions, and Eli Huggins and Timmy Horn and company kind of there on the defensive line, kind of in the middle. So, well, there is some potential there on the line. I don't know if you can bank on that. You can't necessarily bank on, well, you know, we're going to have Wyatt Hubert, who's going to be able to get the quarterback. You know, we're going to have, Drew Wiley to really plug things up. You can't really bank on that. So, well, I think that there is potential there. K-State's going to need to do some things to get off of the football field, and it's going to have to include, more than just getting three and outs. Just to be 100% honest. So, going to have to force fumbles. Going to have to get interceptions. Are going to have to make plays to really reduce the number of touches that offenses get. So, I think that's an important thing that you mentioned. When you look at that secondary, Eddie, I think the secondary looks really, really good. You talked about Echo Boydo. It doesn't surprise me that he may be running with the ones right now, because he was really, really solid. He got thrown in the fire. You're right. He and Justin Gardner really got thrown in the fire, and they both did a really nice job. But man, I thought Boydo did just a tremendous job last year, and was really consistent at the cornerback position. So, I think that you want him to see the field a lot. I think the same thing for Justin Gardner. You know, Justin Gardner may not necessarily start, but I think he's a guy that he's going to be on the field. I definitely think he's going to be on the field a lot. You're going to have some different looks with him. Excuse me, Frog has decided to enter my throat, Eddie. And then when you look at the nickel corner, having Amaris Brown, having someone else throw in there. We've talked already, Stubblefield, the impact that he can do. I think the good thing is when you look at corner, and then obviously Julius Brents, that's a guy that's got a potential NFL future. He's a guy that's probably going to be playing on Sundays after he's here at K-State. So, when you pair him up and you have T. Denson behind him, I mean, you've legitimately got six corners right there that you're like, okay, I'm comfortable with any of these six guys on the football field. I think that I'm at that position where I say I'm comfortable with any of those six on the football field. And so I think that's a good thing. I look at Julius Brinstone. I think that's going to be your – I think that he's got the potential to be your lockdown guy. He's got the potential to be your lockdown guy to be able to force turnovers, to really create havoc on the defense and really help them in there. And like I said, if you can pair him up with Boydo on the other side of him, that's a nice little combo. That's a nice little combo there that could create some problems. So I really like what they have there in the secondary. And the same thing at safety. You've got the grad transfer Russ East coming in, put him at free safety. I think that you're looking good there, and we already know what Jaron McPherson can do. You know, he's one of the best safeties there is in the Big 12. So, you know, and then behind him, Eddie, once again, DJ Smith, Ross Elder, those are guys you trust. If they've got to come in, you trust them. You trust them to go in and do their job. So, I look at the secondary, and I like what I see. I think it is this, when you look at the three levels of the defense, from the defensive line to the linebackers to the secondary, I think the secondary is K-State's biggest strength. I really do. I think they've got depth. I think they've got playmakers. I really think it's an improved unit for K-State. I think you're going to see a lot better play in the secondary. Now, the linebackers, I think, are much more of a question mark. And I mentioned that last week that I think that's really the weakest spot on K-State's defense because, you know, you mentioned it. I mean, Cody Fletcher, he is a tackling machine, and Daniel Green's got some upside. You mentioned, you know, Wayne Jones going to linebacker, making the transition. I think that's a good transition for him. I think it's a good transition for K-State because K-State needs more depth at linebacker as well. But I guess my biggest concern is really depth more than anything. I trust Daniel Green and I trust Cody Fletcher. But I still think that it's safe to say that there's some big question marks. There's some big question marks at the linebacker position. And, you know, how will Wayne Jones transition? You know, what will Eric Munoz do as a transfer? And then beyond that, you've got a lot of unknowns. You really do. And so if K-State has any injuries or anything like that, a linebacker, you can have a bit of an issue. You could have a bit of an issue. So I think the linebacking core definitely has some question marks. But if they can stay healthy at that position, you know, I think K-State will be fine. Like I said, I do have confidence in Cody Fletcher and Daniel Green. I just think those two guys need to be a little more consistent. But if they can do that, which I expect them to do, I think K-State will be fine. I think that's just asking a lot for those two, you know, for your linebacking core to go a whole season not getting banged up. So, you know, what happens when they get banged up? What happens when you need three linebackers on the field? You know, what happens in these scenarios? And I think it's a lot more fuzzy when you go there. So, going to be interesting to see what happens there. But some question marks at that linebacking core. Some question marks in this defense in general. You know, we've kind of broken down all these positions on the team. And K-State offense, I think it's clear that that's the better unit right now. We could be wrong once the season rolls around. You know, maybe it ends up being the opposite. You know, maybe the K-State defense ends up better than the offense. But to me, it seems like the offense is the strength. It seems like there's more question marks on the defensive side of the ball. You know, just because there's a lot of question marks when you stray away from the secondary. I'm pretty confident in that secondary and what they can do, but when you get away from that secondary, there are questions a lot of questions at that first and second level. Unlike on the offense, you feel like for the most part, you pretty much know what you're going to get outside of some question marks at receiver. So I'm going to be interested to see the way it goes, but definitely am excited about some of the players in the defense. I think K-State does have the potential to be able to do some nice things on defense, but they're going to have to get creative. They're going to have to get creative with their looks and force some teams into some mistakes. And like you said, they're going to need to force turnovers to be a successful unit.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, we're going to be talking about, obviously, K-State football all fall long. And obviously, we got Stanford in less than 17 days at the recording of this podcast as well. So we're going to start to get some answers for sure. So there, I mean, you said there's a lot of unknowns about this defense. We talked about that last week. We're talking about it tonight. A lot of questions, but they're going to be answered starting with a Stanford game. So we're going to know who's the playmakers. We do know some of them, but we're going to know who the playmakers are and who's got some work, who got some work to do. And obviously the big thing is before we wrap this thing up with a little bit of Chiefs talk here, Eddie Greer, Alex A. in the Pro Project Podcast, episode 60 of the podcast here. This will be going out either tomorrow night or usual time, usual day, Friday. So be out on the lookout for that. And, of course, a lot more doing our prediction show schedule-wise next week. Very excited to do that like we did last year. But, yeah, was it going back? I lost my train of thought. Yes. So it's going to be interesting. That is for sure. Yes. And also the whole forfeit thing as well. It was brought up on the news on my way to work today as well. SEC also, I think it was SEC also doing it as well. So if you do not have enough football players on that team, you lose. You automatically forfeit and you lose. So you do not want to be that team that does not follow suit. So that's why, that's how I'm going to put it. And kind of a quick transition into NFL here before we sign out here on the Purple Project Podcast. Speaking of that, my team, the Atlanta Falcons, became the first team to have everybody.
Before you even say it.
What?
I'm clapping for you before I even know what you say.
Yep, they became the first NFL team to be 100% vaccinated. So that is big. Obviously, yes. I mean, you can make fun of the Falcons. I mean, we're getting made fun all the time, but that this is important, folks.
That is important.
Falcons 100% vaccinated. So that is huge news right there. So yes, definitely a nice round of applause.
Yep.
For the Atlanta Falcons, and give kudos to everybody that's in charge, Arthur Blank, to the new head, the HC, Arthur Smith, and a new coaching staff over there for really bringing in a different attitude to the Falcons. Now, obviously, with what's going on, obviously, over there on our end of the spectrum here, we'll see what happens. I suspect us to be a more competitive team than we were last year, so not trying to get the train off the tracks too much, but that was, I just wanted to bring that up a little bit there. But
I'm glad you brought it up. I'm gonna give a comment on the vaccinations in a second, but first, when you mentioned the Falcons, I have to tell you, I was watching the first episode of Hard Knocks last week, and I saw Dan Quinn, you know, doing his thing as defense coordinator for the Cowboys, and I couldn't help but think about you when I saw him, you know, coaching that defense up there in Dallas. So just wanted to pass that along, as well as would Dan Quinn, Eddie, have had that team 100% vaccinated?
No. I didn't. There's a lot of other things that were going on, and I'm listening to Falcons podcast, obviously. And they were kind of Dan Quinn was holding players' hands and all this other stuff, being nice and whatnot. I mean, he's a good guy. He's obviously
very good person.
But he couldn't really control the locker room. Much so.
You've got to be able to control the locker room, especially, in a situation like this. And I don't mean to. You know, I'm not saying that, hey, you know, you have to get vaccinated. That's not what I'm saying at all.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If you're a football coach and you're looking at it and thinking, okay, you know, we can have games forfeited if we can't play. And we are at a significant disadvantage for players who are not vaccinated versus players who are vaccinated, because players who aren't vaccinated have to follow the social distancing protocols. They have to get tested daily. If you are vaccinated, you're not tested unless you're showing symptoms. I mean, it's just such, it's so, the likelihood of something happening to you is so much lower if you are a team that's mostly vaccinated. You know, of course coaches are going to push to try to get their rosters vaccinated. And I'll give the Chiefs credit too, because they've got, they're not 100%. They're not there, but they're over 90%. They're over 90% for their team, and they are at 100% for their entire coaching staff. So they're definitely close as well. And heck, I'll give Case Data a shout out too. They're over 90% vaccinated
as well. They're over that as well. Yep, good
job. And that's huge.
Yeah.
huge for K-State because you mentioned it, Eddie. It was, Bob Bowles, we touched on a little bit at Big 12 Media Days a while back, and it was reiterated again this week, that if a team can't play, there's no moving a game. You're not moving it to the end of the schedule. There's no TBD on this game. No, if you can't play, you lose, and the other team wins, and it's that simple. So if you've got a team that's not vaccinated, or has got a lot of players that aren't vaccinated, and you have an outbreak, then you could be screwed. I mean, you could be screwed. You could lose, and you got players who are still going to be tested every day, and you know, that's also something that's not, that's a disadvantage too. Now, could a team with full vaccinations, could they still have an outbreak? Yeah, they could still have an outbreak, but the chances of it are a lot less likely. So the chances that K-State would have to forfeit a game with that many players vaccinated is a lot less likely than it would have been, if most of them weren't vaccinated. So big deal for K-State to get to that threshold, because as you mentioned, Eddie, games are going to be forfeited, and you know what? I'm there with the Big 12. You know, it's an incentive to get those players vaccinated. You know, saying, hey, if you know you don't need to get vaccinated, but look, you guys have an outbreak, we're not changing the schedule around for you. I think that's fair. I think that's a fair compromise. And so, you've got to find a way to get this season done, and you have the means and the tools to do it. And whether or not a team or a player wants to use all of those tools, that's fine. But the truth of the matter is that vaccine is one of them to reduce an outbreak. And if there's an outbreak, the Big 12 is saying, look, you know, we're not going to let this team that had an outbreak because they didn't get vaccinated pull us down. And I, like I said, that's something that it's a, you know, personal decision for every single person. And, you know, that's 100%. You know, how I feel about that. But at the same time, you know, these teams are going to do what they can to try to protect themselves and try to win football games. And so for K-State, it's good to see most of that team vaccinated. You know, hopefully they can stay healthy and they're not forfeiting games. And, you know, looking at your Falcons, Eddie, same type of deal. You know, and in the NFL, it's unlikely the Falcons are going to have to forfeit games. Maybe they'll benefit from a team or two that has to forfeit a game, and they'll get a couple of wins that way because they're 100% vaccinated. So you know, good on the Falcons. Good on the Falcons for getting to that vaccination rate. You know, good for K-State for getting to that rate. And hopefully, we see more. More who do get there. You know, because while it's personal choice, I definitely, me personally, I think there's a lot of benefits there. And, hopefully they can, you know, these teams will be healthier because they have it. These players will be healthier from just a personal perspective. And then hopefully their football teams benefit as well.
Yep. That would be great. So definitely we'll keep close tabs on that. Folks, time to close out the show, folks. I gotta put my 1.5-year-old to bed because I hear rumbling around. So, time for me to put Emma to bed. Alex, you have the honors tonight closing the show out here. Obviously, I was going to mention the Chiefs real quickly here. What are your thoughts on? I know it's preseason, but what are your early thoughts as you close this out?
I'm excited about the Chiefs being back. You know, they had their first preseason game there against the 49ers, and good game for them to get a 19-16 to win. The ones look good. The new offensive line look good. The defense look pretty good as well. Honestly, a lot of good, I think, from what the Chiefs did. And I think that they had some backups that looked pretty good too. They actually let them on a game winning drive there at the end, got a stop. And then got a score there, so that was nice to see. We'll see what they do against Arizona this week. You know, you can't look much into preseason, but
yeah.
But I definitely like what I'm seeing from the Chiefs. I think that they are going to be a little bit better defensively. I think they'll be a little bit better offensively. Their offensive line is going to be way better I think they're going to end up with the top 10 offensive line in the NFL this year, and they're starting three rookies, it looks like, on the offensive line this year. So, you could say it's a little scary, and it is, but I'm a little less scared about it, Eddie, because they have two Pro Bowlers on the left side. They brought in Pro Bowl tackle Orlando Brown. They brought in Pro Bowl guard Joe Tooney. And then they've got three rookies who are all complete studs that I think all have Pro Bowl caliber careers ahead of them. Creed Humphrey, who they drafted in the second round from Oklahoma. I think he's going to be a really, really good player for them at center. Trey Smith at right guard. He would have been a first-round talent if it wasn't for some health conditions, and he's coming out and playing great from Tennessee, so I think that he's going to be really, really good. And then Lucas Niang, who a lot of these K-State listeners may be familiar with because he played at TCU, he's going to be their right tackle, most likely. They drafted him in the third round and a year ago, and they sat out the first year due to COVID, so it's kind of a redshirt year for him. But I think that he has a really, really high ceiling. So, and then K-State had the Chiefs got a lot of depth behind those guys as well. I mean, they go legit 10 deep at their line, so I think they're a lot better positioned there. And so Patrick Mahomes with more time is, I think, scary for the NFL. So I think that's a good thing for them. And they've got all the weapons that they have around them. You know, I think that running back, they're loaded. Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They got Jerick McKinnon. Darrell Williams, nice little crew there. And then you still obviously got Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Byron Pringle, keep an eye out for him, Eddie, the K-Stater. He is going to get a lot of playing time this year for the Chiefs. He's going to be playing. He is listed as one of the top four receivers on this team this year on the depth chart. And I fully expect him to be a top four guy. And I think there's a big drop-off, honestly, from four to five for the Chiefs. So Byron Pringle is going to be on the football field a lot for the Chiefs this year, which is going to be exciting to see because as a Chiefs fan and a K-State fan, I would love to see Byron Pringle have a great year. Have a great year with the Chiefs. So I'm really excited for him and the improvement that he's made. And I'm really excited to see what he can do getting snaps. Really on a consistent basis for the first time with Patrick Mahomes in that offense. So excited about that, and I think he's got a great shot at ending back up in the big game. We'll see what happens, but I think they're positioned as well as anyone, so I'm pretty excited.
All right, that's a little wrap-up from Alex there from the Chiefs side of things. And folks, episode 60 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition is in the books. Another episode wrapped up. Eddie Greer in Manhattan, Kansas. Al Satan out there in San Diego, California. Remember, folks, when the podcast comes out, it'll probably be 15 days until opening kick down there in Arlington, folks. Next week, dedicated strictly to the football schedule. We've been talking about it a little bit tonight and really throughout the summer as well. We'll be making our record predictions, schedule predictions, from the first game and right through the end of the Texas game. So a lot going on there. And remember, I'm going to throw this in there again. K-State Soccer, at the moment this podcast comes out, could already play their opening game against Weber State tomorrow night at 7 p.m. there as well. I think there's a promotional night there as part of that as well. So big night for K-State Soccer here in Manhattan, Kansas. And then over the weekend, volleyball gets their exhibition started as Kansas City comes to Bramlage as well. And then on Sunday, soccer with Omaha coming to Beezer Family Park as well. A lot going on, and it's about to heat up, folks. Eddie Greer, Alex Satan, Pro Project Podcast in the books. Alex, get ready for next week, sir.
I look forward to it. It's a schedule show. I'm excited for it. I'll talk to you next week.
Go Cats. We'll talk to you then next week.
listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.